The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the 30th of August. Today is a monumental day in a lot of ways, beginning with this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was time to end a 20-year war. Thank you so much.
It was time to end a 20-year war, and it's officially over. In fact, less than an hour ago, the time was 4:35 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. The headline in the Washington Post reads, "Last U.S. military flight leaves Kabul, bringing an end to America's longest war." And to that, the news conference in the background. To that, I say, it's about time. It's more than about time. The Washington Post goes on to say, "The Pentagon said the U.S. had pulled out the last of its troops and the evacuation operation at Kabul's international airport had ended. The departure caps a chaotic withdrawal that was rushed by the Taliban's rapid takeover of the country and scarred by a deadly suicide attack that killed 13 U.S. service members and scores of Afghans. More than 120,000 people, last I heard it was 123, had been evacuated since August 14th, amounting to one of the largest airlifts in history. But the deteriorating security situation and chaos at the airport resulted in some Americans and thousands of Afghan allies being left behind." So we've talked about this in the recent days. I don't think any war, especially a war that we lost, ends any better. War from start to finish, everything in between, and the aftermath is ugly. This was ugly. Those 13 service members, it's heartbreaking. They shouldn't have died. But think about how many lives they saved. There's one young woman, her name was Nicole, so I remember it, was photographed holding a baby at the airport as the baby was placed onto one of these evacuation flights. And she tagged it with the line, "I love my job." She shouldn't have died, but it's war, and war sucks. So now the headlines are that in the drone strike that took out a vehicle with reportedly a number of suicide bombers, all with their murderous vests in the car on its way to the airport, exploded. So the drone strike took out the car, and then the explosives within the car set off an even larger detonation that killed a lot of people, civilians mostly, including a family of 10, I think, and a bunch of kids. Sucks. Really, really sucks. But what do they expect? We shouldn't have hit the vehicle, in which case there would have been, you know, hundreds, if not thousands more at the airport killed. War is ugly. You know, back in the 60s, there was a famous poster of like a flower, and it said, "War is not healthy for children and other living things." That stayed with me for 50 years. It's sad. But you know what? It's over. Thank God America's longest war is over. Shouldn't have gone on this long. It probably shouldn't have happened in the first place. It's over. So I think it is time to celebrate. I know it's hard to celebrate when you're thinking about people that are stuck behind, when you're thinking about what happens next, when you think about the people left behind, the Afghans left behind, the women and the children. There's a great piece in The Atlantic today. I doubt I'll be able to get its author on. It's a guy named David Rothkopf, who wrote, the headline reads, "Biden deserves credit, not blame for Afghanistan. Americans should feel proud of what the U.S. government and military have accomplished in these past 2 weeks." I could read some of it for you, and maybe I will. I'll just keep it open here in case we want to go there. You know, when you think about it, I'm not going to make this analogy now, but later on, perhaps in the interview, because our guest today is the director of a new film that opens this weekend, just in time for Labor Day. She's the director of a film called The Big Scary S Word. And in this case, the S word is, oh, wait a minute. Do I have a, I have to have a, oh, damn. Do I have like a danger? Here we go. The big scary S word. Socialism. Socialism. We're gonna take the fear out of socialism. If people who think that socialism is a scary word would listen, they're probably not listening to this program, but they should be. So we will deal with that. But, you know, I got to tell you, today was a day I'd been looking forward to for a long time because it's a big, important day in my life. And we'll get to that in a second. You know, I wasn't going to tell you about this, but I feel like I have to in case I'm, well, I've been off a lot lately, but in case I'm really kind of off, I had a rough weekend. On Saturday, I went in to get my third Moderna vaccine, because I believe in the vaccines. The rise of the Delta variant scares the shit out of me, and I'm eligible. In fact, I saw my doctor, my primary care doctor, on Friday, and she suggested that, yes, I'm certainly eligible, and I should get it because, you know, and my oncologist said the same thing, because I'm basically down to one lung, and should I get COVID, and the pneumonia that often goes along with it, that I would have a very rough time of it. So that said, I went Saturday morning and got my third Moderna vaccine. And I had a reaction. I didn't immediately. You know, I sat for the obligatory 15 minutes and all was well. The shot didn't even hurt like it did last time. The second shot, whoever shot me, must have hit something that it was painful. And I did have a bad reaction with the second shot that, yes, I reported. But I felt sick for 24 to 48 hours. But I said at the time, and I'll say it now, it was worth it. Well, same thing happened. Saturday, about mid-evening, I started feeling just not good. Just felt lousy. And I had a really, really rough night. I'm feeling a lot better now. I've slept more in the last 24 hours or so than I've slept in a long time. So I got that going for me. But for those of you watching on one of the video streams, I don't know if you can see this or not. Oh, yes, you can. I'm turning my arm toward the camera. You see that big red blotch on my arm? That's the site of the vaccine. So it blew up. It got still warm. I was nauseous. I threw up. I was just not good. And I started feeling a little better, and then I felt worse again. But you know what? I would do it again. Because if I felt that bad from getting the vaccine, I can only imagine what it would feel like getting COVID. I do not want COVID, and I don't want any of you getting COVID either. And now the crazies are pushing this drug called ivermectin. Seriously, it's a horse and cow dewormer. And it was then like modified for humans as an antiparasitic. COVID is not a parasite. It's a virus. And it's morphing because idiots like the people taking the ivermectin, or however you call it, won't get vaccinated. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. So it blows my mind. And the people pushing it, I don't understand how you know, a good portion of this country will go against the medical science, go against the doctors, and say, I'm not going to take the vaccine that's been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, but instead, I will buy this anti-parasitic from a livestock feed store and take a dose that's meant for a 1,000-pound animal because that makes more sense. And remember, these are the same people. The same people pushing this are the same people who, when Donald Trump was in office, were applauding him for, what was it called? Operation Warp Speed. Remember this? The Daily Show is on a roll these days, I'll tell you. I'm only going to play the audio for you here, because if I play the video, they'll copyright violate me. So here is a little split screen comparison the Daily Show put together featuring those wonderful news, what are they called? They're not news people, spokesmodels or whatever they are, actors on the Fox, you know, during Trump and during the Biden administration. See if you could figure out which statements came with which president.
The FDA just giving full approval to Pfizer's COVID vaccine, and in record time too. That has critics asking if the process was rushed. Was it? Operation Warp Speed is great. He was the one, Trump, pushing the company, saying, yeah, 5 years, that's not good enough for me. Like, I want this done in a year. And then they were able to do it.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the FDA is going to give full approval to the Pfizer vaccine. Do you believe the timing is curious? Warp Speed, you break it down. It's one of the president's finest accomplishments. He got rid of all the paperwork and all the bureaucracy that would have stopped this vaccine.
Did they not push this FDA approval too fast?
Operation Warp Speed, how quickly they got this done, the mass dissemination of vaccines across the country, it's incredible.
It's incredible. All right, Laura Ingraham. So you were so encouraging. You were so excited about it before. And now what? I don't know. I just don't know. The stupidity of people really astounds me. I thought as a nation we were smarter than that. You know, there used to be something called American exceptionalism. And to an extent, I never believed in that theory, but to an extent, it was right. We had the best of everything, right? We had the best healthcare, not healthcare system, but the best doctors and hospitals. We had the best education. People would come here for college. We had a great infrastructure, had being the operative word. Now, we are bringing up the rear on every front, in education, in healthcare, certainly in healthcare systems, certainly in taking care of our citizens, our people. This is not a place that I think the rest of the world wants to come to anymore, unless you're in a nation like Afghanistan. It's just, and some of the stuff that's going on defies reason. I've been blocking people today on the Twitters because, for instance, some guy, and I couldn't tell you who he is anymore because I blocked him, but I did glean that he's some right-wing podcaster who apparently lives in South Carolina, who goes online and implores everyone, if you're in California, vote yes on the recall. No! He's like, it's run so badly now, anybody could do a better job. And I'm like, what is up with you? So the largest state in the nation, you want what, Larry Elder to win? By the way, Larry Elder, who is this right-wing hate talk radio guy from Los Angeles, has never run anything. He's not a manager. He's not experienced enough to be a governor or to run a business, for that matter. This might be all you need to know. You know who he mentored as a kid growing up? Who he would like to see as president of the United States one day? Stephen Miller. Donald Trump's little anti-immigration a bigoted boy toy, that guy. That is who Larry Elder thinks should be president. And this moron and others on the Twitter machine think that that's the way to go. Oh my God. 2 weeks, California, you got 2 weeks to turn this around. And you can just vote no on the recall. You know what? If Larry Elder wants to run for governor in a legitimate election, then do it. Do it. But don't steal an election again. California also needs to change this law. Well, there's a supermajority of Democrats in the state legislature and a Democrat still in the governor's office. Change that law. This recall nonsense is bullshit. This is how California wound up with Arnold as governor before. Stop it. Stop it. Ugh. See, but despite all of this craziness that's going on, I'm celebrating today. I am celebrating that the war is over. Over. And I feel terrible about the people left behind, but you know what? There are always people left behind. We shouldn't have gone in the first place. This was a mistake 20 years in the making. You cannot put the blame on Joe Biden. He got us out of there. When Obama didn't, Trump sure didn't. And, you know, Joe Biden said he would, and he did. And he did. And so... But that's not what I'm saying. I mean, I am celebrating. I'm glad the war is over. And today is the day I will always remember for that, August 30th. But August 30th is also a really important day for me for a couple of other reasons. I've told you about this. I feel like I talk about it too much, but it is life-changing. It was 5 years ago today that I went into surgery, that they cut my left side open and removed two cancerous tumors from my left lung. And most of my left lung to go along with it, and it started me on the journey of being cancer-free. And now that 5 years have passed, I'm cured. If I could play music, I would. Maybe I'd play The Cure. But that's not all. This is a day that has, well, it's an important day in this household because it was 13 years ago today that David and I met. We actually went on a date. We met online. I was 49. He was 57. We're old. 13 years ago, do the math. I guess he was 56. Sorry, I don't want to age him more than he is. Hey, David, if you're listening, come in here. It's embarrassing, but I'm going to tell you the story because there are a lot of people discouraged that they don't think they'll find love later in life. And I'm here to tell you that, yes, you can. And even though the thought of like going online to meet someone might be a little, you know, distasteful for you, you might think that's weird. It's worth it. And I got to tell you, I had done a number of these different dating sites. I did for a minute. Pick that up. I was on Match.com for a little while, and I think I went on one date, maybe two, and then I realized that wasn't for me. But I had put up a profile on JDate, and JDate is the Jewish, you know, dating service. You're going to come over here because I'm going to put you on that camera, actually. I know you're in your beautiful workout clothes, but I got to make sure I can get you on the shot. So on JDate, I did the same thing. I joined for like a month. I had one horrible date, and then I stopped. You have to, that's you. So if you can bend down so we can, you can't see you yet because I want to make sure you're in the shot first. So JDate, I signed up for, had one date, and I canceled my membership because I thought this is ridiculous. But I left the profile up there because they alert you if somebody, you know, sends you a message. And, you know, I'd look and see who it was who sent me a message, and none of them interested me until one day I get an email from this guy whose name is David, and he was intriguing enough that I rejoined for a month so I could contact him. And the rest, as they say, is history. You've heard him on the phone a million times. Now, I guess you can meet him in person. David Sloan, this is my husband now. We've been married for 5 years. It'll be six on New Year's Eve. And today, 13 years ago, we met for the first time. So, David, say hello.
She walked into my life and Nothing else has ever been the same since.
I pulled him out of his workout. So David, you know, works out during the show and listens while he's working out. So that's why he's, you know, that's the beautiful hand coverings here. So, and you are actively looking. You went on a bunch of dates with people.
Well, I had been divorced.
Yes.
2 years before that. And it was traumatic for me. And when I started dating people, it was that end of March when I had been in Arizona for spring training and I came back and I started dating people. I wasn't looking to just buck around. I was looking to meet somebody that I could share my life with. And like I said, she walked into my life and nothing has been the same since.
And you knew immediately, right? No, we met at a restaurant in Weston, a town sort of midway between, I lived in North Miami Beach at the time and he was up here in Coral Springs. And we met at this restaurant in Weston that's no longer there, by the way. And we hit it off. Dinner went so well that then we didn't want it to end. So we thought, all right, we'll go to a movie. So we go to a movie theater, and there was really nothing playing. We were going to go, Mamma Mia was playing.
It
had just come out. So we're like, all right, we'll go see Mamma Mia. Well, we'll go to buy the tickets. And the woman says, do you know, I want to make sure you know, this is the sing-along version. Now, we had smoked a joint on the way from dinner to the movie theater. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I just met this man. I'm really high. I couldn't take that. So there was another movie playing called The House Bunny.
Yes.
House Bunny. And that we wound up seeing that. So those are kind of our two movies. And I'll tell you something. The next day I went to see my sister. And I said, you know, I met this guy last night. I said, this could be something. She's like, oh, Nick, come on. You just met him. You don't know anything. Like, you know, give me some credit here. So that was a Saturday night, right? We went out Saturday night. Well, on Tuesday, this was in 2008. It was during the Obama-Biden campaign. Again, this was August 30th, 2008. So it was just leading up to...
It
was during the campaign. Now, I had been fired like a week before. I was doing mornings on WINZ in Miami, which was then Progressive Talk. And they fired me the Friday.
Well, hold on a minute.
Yes.
Hold on a minute.
Okay.
It was more than a week before. I had been out in California.
Okay, it was like 2 weeks before.
Before I was in Arizona.
Okay, I was fired on the 22nd.
And when we first talked, I was in California. And then I came back here and I got wrapped up in business stuff. And I didn't respond to your email.
Right.
So Nicole sends me this email and says, what, do you have a problem with women who are unemployed? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This girl's got some balls. I have to respond to her right away.
Well, I had just lost my job. So they fired me in advance of Clear Channel flipping South Florida's Progressive Talk station to the fifth sports talk station in town. And because Don Imus's contract was up, he was available, they brought him in to replace me until they did the format change, was like 2 months later. So I was kind of freaked out. And there I am, unemployed. This guy had written to me. And then I think I was kind of terse, or we spoke, and it didn't go well. But then after a few days, I'm like, what, you got something against unemployed women? And then he called. We made the date. So...
You told me you needed a babysitter. I wanted to get together with you Saturday.
And you did?
Said I couldn't because
Allison was only nine. Allison was nine at the time. And I said,
if I can get a babysitter, will you go out with me?
Yep.
And you said yes. So I arranged for a babysitter to come to your house.
Yep.
And they were licensed and bonded.
Yeah, it was a service. Right. You got the service, and I don't know what you paid for it, but probably too much. But anyway, so we got the babysitter.
It.
And we went out, and
so we went out on a Sunday. That was our first date, and then
I think it was a Saturday Sunday. It would be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday because the Biden event was on a Tuesday.
It was a Sunday, and it was 2 days later
that
Joe Biden came down here, and he was my wingman.
Right. So what happened was somebody that I knew who ran one of the Democratic clubs here in South Florida contacted me and said, hey, Joe Biden's coming to speak at our thing. Would you like to come? And I'm like, yeah. So he sent me over some tickets. And I said to David, well, I've got tickets Tuesday afternoon to see Joe Biden. And you want to go? Yeah. So we went. And that was, we decided that was technically our third date because we had dinner and we had the movie. And so this was our third date. And so after Joe Biden,
we were going to have lunch. So, and then it just progressed from there.
It did. And so we have another anniversary coming up in a couple of days. Luckily, we were both old, so it didn't result in any unwanted things. So, and here we are 13 years later.
13 years later. All 13 right. of the best years of my life in many ways, and some of the worst years of my life in many ways. Good Lord. I never thought that things would happen the way they did, but.
No, it's been a crazy 13 years.
Both for us and for the country.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a question
yeah.
that I'd like to ask. When is Joe Biden going to go to New Orleans and throw these poor people some paper towels?
Oh, yes.
Like that's a real president
exactly.
would have done.
Well, did you know that he went on some radio show last night or this morning or something and bitched that the networks were covering the hurricane all night instead of Afghanistan?
What can I say?
It's opposite world. Anyway, happy anniversary, my love.
I love you madly.
I love you too.
What do you want me to do with this?
You can give it to me.
Okay,
All right.
I'll give it to you.
I know you will. All right. Bye. So that's our story. It is our anniversary. One of our anniversaries. Not the wedding anniversary. That one's coming. That one's on New Year's Eve. So we wound up getting married how many years later? A number of years later. A lot of years later. It was, I don't know, we're 5 years, so 8 years after we met. It was a fairly long engagement. And here we are. So anyway, that's our story. I thought I would share it with you and explain to you why I'm so all over the place today. From a COVID shot reaction to the end of the war to the crazies on the internet to, you know, the anniversary of when I met my husband. And again, I was 49 years old. He was 56. We're 13 years older now. But just showing you that you can make that change in your life. Good things can happen, and you can find love even in your golden years. All right. I want to play for you. Before we bring on our guest, I want to play for you the trailer of a new movie that opens this weekend. It's opening on demand and in theaters just in time for Labor Day weekend, which is makes all the sense in the world. You'll understand why when you see the trailer. The movie is called The Big Scary S Word. And I know when you think about, okay, what S word is so scary? Well, it's not scary for you or me, but it is, I guess, scary for people who don't understand what it's about or who listen to right-wing hate talk radio, you know, the kind that Larry Elder does in Los Angeles. So, let me share this with you. I'm just trying to hold on. I'm vamping while I get the shot set up because I should have done this before and I didn't because, well, you know me. All right. So the big scary S word and this in a second is the trailer. Here we go. Ah. All right. Hit play. And then we go like that.
We could begin with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, written by a democratic socialist. Walt Whitman, Martin Luther King Jr. Albert Einstein, socialist to the core. Socialism is as American as apple pie.
Most socialists begin with a critique of inequality.
Basic human rights need to be provided for.
Teachers are buying supplies out of our own pockets.
I decided to run for office. I saw what can happen when the systems that are designed to protect working people fail us.
Society changes when people who otherwise don't have power stand up.
Five individuals own more wealth than the entire bottom half of the human population.
We got so
there is an outrage on the part of the people, Mr. Chairman, that is not necessarily perceived here in Congress.
We believe in democracy. The problem with the word socialism is that it's been equated with totalitarianism.
The Red Scare, anybody who uses the big scary S word is automatically Stalin. It doesn't work anymore.
We've got thousands of teachers who've come to this building demanding answers.
When you can't do your job without having to have a second job to pay the bills, that's bull.
Democratic socialism is the value that in a modern, moral, and wealthy society, no person in America should be too poor to live.
Our job is to change the world in the United States of America.
It's possible to design a society and economy based on people's most pressing needs.
More voice from the workers actually benefits the company.
Yes.
Socialism is really, at heart, the ultimate expression of democracy.
That's not American. I don't know what is.
The big, scary S word. Again, it opens this weekend and on demand and in theaters, and I'm thrilled to welcome its director to the program, Yael Bridge. Is that how I pronounce your name, Yael?
Yael.
Yael. First of all, congratulations on this film. I found it riveting.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it's so important. We live in a time where, you know, people are just, they're nuts. They're afraid of words without knowing what the words mean. They don't trust the scientists. You know, it's just, I call it opposite world, but that's where we are. And I think the time was right for a movie about the big scary S word. And the S word in this case is socialism.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think the time is now. So thank you.
So what made you, how long has this been in the works? What made you decide to do this film?
Yeah, I think around 3-4 years ago was when we started working on it. You know, my last film, I was working with Robert Reich, who was the labor secretary under Clinton. And that film was called Saving Capitalism. And so for that film, we were traveling all around the country with Professor Reich talking about his ideas and his politics. And that ended up being during the primary season of 2016. And so was with him and in, you know, random parts all around the country during that, and met a bunch of these Bernie Trump voters. And it was just so surprising hearing these people had good union jobs and were just saying, I don't know, they both sound like they're gonna change the system. I really can't tell, which was gobsmacking to me. And then just seeing how successful Bernie really did with people who I never would have thought would have, you know, been okay with someone who called himself a socialist. So I thought, oh, something is happening. This is new, this is different. And let's see what's going on. And so that inquiry ended up with this film.
And, you know, you mentioned Robert Reich. He was one of your advisors on the film, advisory board. You had an advisory board with not only Robert Reich, but also Richard Wolff, John Nichols, and others. I'm just giving the names that I know my listeners know. But a staff writer at Jacobin Magazine, another founding editor and publisher of Jacobin, which is the socialist magazine. So I'm wondering, I know you spoke with Bernie Sanders, or at least he's featured in the film, as is AOC and a number of other more prominent democratic socialists today. Did you have the discussion about the baggage with the word socialism? Because it's the baggage that people are freaked out about. It's not actually what they stand for.
Yeah, I think that was really, you know, part of the, frankly, the impetus of the whole film was like, what is it with this word? What does this word mean? And why is there baggage? And how much that baggage really is generational? So what's going on with that? So I was lucky to have, as you mentioned, such really great advisors and support guiding me through this world, which was not my world. You know, I didn't come to this topic because I was a diehard socialist. I came to this topic because I think, like you're saying, I agree with the politics, the word, the label was all sort of new to me. And so that was my own journey you're describing. with that word.
So, you know, I live in South Florida, and I knew that the word brought up a lot of stuff for people. And I knew that the right, as they tend to do, would try to capitalize on that. And sure enough, they did. I mean, they used it to scare people. And here in South Florida, there's a huge population from Cuba, also from Venezuela and other parts of Central and South America, who are freaked out by the socialist regimes from the places they came from. This is not what democratic socialism is. Democratic socialism, as Bernie Sanders likes to talk about it, is what you find in Denmark, in a lot of those Nordic countries, a lot of European nations where people, you know, their health care, their education, and other things are taken care of. Family leave, they take care of their people. It's a way of all boats rising. It's not an oppressive form of government. And there seems to be this thing about the word. That's why I love the title of the movie, The Big Scary S Word. Did you come up with any kind of solution, any kind of way above this?
Did I come up with a solution? I think the word is loaded, and I think the goal that we had with the film was to let socialists in America define the word for themselves. I think since the Cold War, the definition of socialism, that language, has just been defined by the right. And not even the right, like in contemporary times, it's the right. But historically, it was just the air we breathe. Oh, we're, you know, in the film, we have the quote from Nancy Pelosi, when she says, oh, like, we're all capitalists. Like,
right.
It's not even worth a discussion, which is just bonkers. And so saying, okay, well, instead of having capitalists define socialism, mm-hmm. let's let socialists, let them say what exactly they believe. What do they exactly advocate for? Because it's not gulags. It's not, you know, it's not uniforms and, you know, getting rid of markets and taking away private property. That's not what they're talking about. And then later we can talk about policies. You can disagree with policies all you want, but what we don't need to have is this stigma attached to this specific word when that's not what people are actually saying. That was where we landed.
So if someone were to ask you today to define socialism and define democratic socialism, what would you say?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think that's tricky because socialists, all the ones that I spoke to and interviewed, everyone has sort of it's a spectrum. There's lots of different definitions. And some people say, oh, well, you know, Marx said, you know, workers on the means of production. Well, what does that look like in practice? Everyone has sort of a different idea. But what I think universally is agreed upon is socialism is democracy. And so the more socialism you have, the more democracy you have, and vice, and you know, the less democracy you have, the less socialism you have. And with that as a framework, we can look at different policies and say, okay, does this enhance democracy? Do you feel more empowered as a worker, as a consumer, as an individual? If yes, then perhaps that falls under that rubric. But having such a rigid definition, it's not really helpful. It just creates division. And it's the same thing with capitalism. You know, I don't think that's specific. It's, you know, all terms. There's always going to be different language around it.
Right. But capitalism, while it should instill fear and terror in some people, my goodness, it's created the biggest divide in income disparity than any other time in history that I can imagine. It's blatantly unfair, where socialism aims for fairness. I know I'm oversimplifying everything, but that's the way I see it. People should be freaked out by capitalism, but those who are shunned and talked about, you're the bad guy. And the thing is, this is not it's not socialism or democracy. It's socialism or capitalism in a democratic society, right?
I think so. And I know I might go farther to say that I don't know how you can really have democracy in a capitalist society, at least the way we're practicing it today. They seem diametrically opposed. When you have so much wealth inequality and the people with the wealth are able to, through lobbying by judges, or not by, but you know, I don't mean to be sinister about it. It's just the way the system is set up, that you can donate to candidates that you agree with who will help protect your property, protect your businesses. And that just becomes a vicious cycle where it's just really, it's not democratic. We don't even have to talk about gerrymandering and all of the other stuff. Just like it just is not democratic.
No, it's not democratic. This is the most undemocratic democracy that I've known. If Bernie Sanders called himself an FDR Democrat instead of a democratic socialist, do you think he would have done better?
Yeah, that's a good question that I don't know. I mean, I think about it a lot. We talked about it a lot on the film. You know, I think there are a few different ways to look at it. Like I said, in the 2016, people were really interested in anti-establishment politicians. And the language, the rhetoric that Trump and Bernie were using was virtually identical. I remember at the time looking at some online quiz that was like, who said it, Bernie or Trump? And right? You really couldn't tell. Like, Trump really was engaging in draining the swamp and getting rid of the elites and expanding healthcare, like all of this stuff that obviously—
Too bad he was lying about everything.
Right, he lied through his teeth, right? He obviously didn't deliver on any of those things. And I think having the label socialism helped differentiate Bernie from these other establishment Democrats. And we can also look in the most recent Democratic primary where specific policies might not have been that different between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but she was saying, oh, I'm capitalist to my bone. And Bernie was saying, yo, I'm over here, I'm a socialist. Uh-huh. He did far better than she did. So, you know, looking at those two things, I think probably it was very helpful for him. And we see that, that now where I live in Oakland, you definitely have— we're in the middle of some special election right now, and both of the candidates are calling themselves progressives, right? They're both running to the left. Like, one of them is clearly not a progressive, and the other one is.
Wait, who's running? Who's calling themselves a progressive? Not Larry Elder?
No. Okay. It's a special election in my district.
In New York. Yeah, I thought you were talking about the California recall. Okay, you scared me for a second.
No. But just in general, I think we're seeing politicians using the language of the left, seeing that calling yourself a moderate Democrat isn't so helpful, which is why I think the language of socialism is so much more powerful now, because it is a dividing line. Well, no one is calling themselves a socialist if they're not actually a socialist, right? Like, that means a certain specific thing that we know. And if those are things that you value, that's great, you know? Or if they're things you don't value, that's great too. Then you know who's not your guy or gal.
Yes. We're speaking with Yael Bridge. She's the director of the new film, The Big Scary S Word. It opens Friday in theaters and on demand. On demand. So you can see it in lots of different places just in time for Labor Day weekend, which makes sense. There are a lot of self-proclaimed Democratic socialists already in office in this country. I mean, everybody knows Bernie Sanders and AOC because those are the two most highest profile. But what they may not realize is Pramila Jayapal, who heads up the Democratic Progressive Caucus in the House, is also a Democratic socialist. She came up through the Seattle City Commission as a socialist. And now she's, I think, one of our best members of Congress. Who else? Who else don't we realize is a socialist in elected office?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think there's six Congress people right now, which is a huge amount, right? So you have Jamal Bowman, you have AOC. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to label because I'm sure I'll forget some people, Rashida Tlaib. But it's not just even in Congress. You know, there are socialists getting elected to judges, judgeships. That's hugely important. There are city council members. My sister-in-law is running as a socialist for city council in Somerville, Massachusetts. And actually, the Somerville slate, I think six people running for city council there. And if I think five of them win, then that whole city council will be majority Democratic socialist.
Wow.
Like, that would be wild. And I think that that's like very possible that that could happen. We have the new mayor to be in Buffalo who won primary.
Well, did I hear right? They are talking about eliminating the office of mayor in Buffalo because this Democratic socialist in the primary upended the guy who held that office as a Democrat for something like 20 years. Again, I don't remember the specifics, but now they're talking in order to keep this socialist from taking office, they're talking about eliminating the position entirely.
Yeah. I mean, people, if you were in the Democratic Party and you have been in it for a long time, you're going to find this movement really threatening. That that makes sense. But there are lots of different, like I said, lots of different. In Seattle, you talked about Jayapal. There's also Kshama Sawant.
That's right.
City Council in Seattle. Yes. And she's been
following in Pramila's footsteps, I think. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. And she, you know, they spent tons of money. Amazon, you know, they don't, because she wants to tax Amazon. It's a huge problem in Seattle. They spent loads of money trying to get her out, but they couldn't. She's incredibly popular. And so, you know, we could talk about what that means for the Democratic Party at large and strategically, but even not just, we just look at like how people are doing and what's going to be helpful. What are the policies that you said in the beginning are going to lift everyone up?
Right. If you had to tell somebody why socialist instead of Democrat, what are the things that set it apart? Why socialism and not part of the Democratic Party?
Well, you know, Democrats are running, socialists are running in the Democratic Party.
That's
aside
right.
from Kshama Sawant, who ran as a socialist, everyone else is in the Democratic Party. And that's its own thing of whether they should be or not. But I think you don't have to make a distinction. I think that's a false dichotomy to say, am I a socialist or am I a Democrat? I mean, it's just, it depends on your district. But I also would obviously say, you should watch the film
watch
and then make
film.
A decision for yourself.
Well, that makes sense. All right, in the film, you talk about a few specific stories. You talk about Lee, a socialist in Virginia State Assembly. Tell us a little bit about Lee.
Yeah, Lee Carter lived in Virginia, and he was an electrician, and he hurt himself on the job and was really struggling to get workers' comp, and he couldn't figure out how to fix it, and so decided to run for himself to state assembly and state legislature, and he unseated the Republican who was the House Majority Whip and ran as a socialist in the Democratic Party and won, and it was just this, you know, it was crazy. It was unheard of. And especially when we talk now about socialists running and, they can only run in deeply blue districts and that's the only place they're viable. That's just like not the case at all, as we can see from Lee Carter's success. And we follow him during his first year in office and how much he's able to achieve or not achieve and what that experience is like, because it was very alienating. And also I think very eye-opening for him and for us on that process.
You also deal with Wisconsin. Wisconsin is considered by many the birthplace, the hub of progressivism in the United States. It's unfortunately taken a rightward lurch in recent years. I mean, all you have to do is look at Ron Johnson and the former governor, Scott Walker, and you're like, oh my God, what happened to Wisconsin? You deal with Wisconsin. Tell us about Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin was deeply socialist, which was all new to me, right? This is not the history that I was taught in high school. But Wisconsin, Milwaukee had a socialist mayor I'm off on my dates now. I didn't check my card. But I think until the 1960s,
right.
Like 1912 to 1960s or something, they had three different socialist mayors, and they were incredibly popular and incredibly successful, and were able to do, they were called sewer socialists because they really cared about clean water and infrastructure. And so bringing, you know, plumbing to everyone and making sure that the water was good and drinkable, which now we can think, oh man, that would be great. You know, look at Flint. They don't get clean water still. Having good infrastructure is no small feat. And that, you know, that was new information to me. And also just thinking, as you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, talking about the social democracies in Scandinavia. And a big thing that was important to me was to not look internationally. I think we've seen those films before. I was really impressed with Michael Moore's film, Where to Invade Next, where he just goes to different countries and talks about the different policies they have of parental leave or their criminal justice system or, you know, nutrition in public schools. I didn't want to do that. I really wanted to focus on the United States and say, like, these are policies that have worked here. This is a deeply American tradition. You know, this country was founded on democratic principles, and perhaps we're letting those slip. And so let's look at our roots and what that might look like. And as you mentioned, in Wisconsin, also where the Republican Party was founded, by a bunch of people who were socialists.
Wow.
So, you know, it's all here. We don't need to look outside. We can just look, you know, inward to find, I think, a path forward.
It's so ironic, perhaps, scary, right. Sad that Wisconsin made such a huge switch. But they did, and hopefully now they can come back. I mean, I was shocked when, now I'm drawing a blank on his name. When Ron Johnson replaced Russ Feingold, who I thought was an amazing senator, wasn't a socialist, but he was probably as close as you can get.
Yeah. There's a fantastic book about Wisconsin, and I'm so sorry, I'm blanking on the name. I think it's called The Fall of Wisconsin or something. The author, I think his name is Kaufman or something. Huh. And it was just, there's a whole film just on Wisconsin, right? And how that switch went. I mean, we talk a little bit about it in the film, but it really deserves probably its own miniseries. I mean, you had Senator McCarthy during the whole Red Scare pushing how horrible communism and everything was, you know, in the Senate in D.C., while you have a socialist mayor in Milwaukee who's incredibly popular, Frank Zeidler, and they're at the same time. They say, you know, we have always been a nation of contradictions, and those things can function simultaneously. So, two thumbs up to Wisconsin.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you said the word generational earlier, I think you did anyway. And it's what I see certainly down here in South Florida. A lot of the Cubans, the older Cubans, you know, socialism. Then again, they did a whole disinformation campaign on Spanish language radio. Hold on one second. Yes. Robert La Follette. Yes, I know. Fighting Bob La Follette. Yep. No, we haven't mentioned him, but thank you. Yes, you can't. I guess you can't talk about Wisconsin without talking about Funny Bob La Follette.
Apologies. Yeah.
Right. From the Peanut Gallery. But on to
informed Peanut Gallery, I would say, like, Fighting Bob La Follette is hardly like a household name.
So. No, that's true. But among people who listen to this show, I think it is. I mean, they have the Fighting Bob Fest every year or something. I mean, there's still that. Community is alive and well in Wisconsin. It's just, you know, the Ron Johnsons and the crazies took over. But this is also, I guess, part of it, the generational aspect. Younger people don't look on socialism as this horrible thing. They see it as a positive. Is there going to come a time when people like my age die off and it will be more accepted because people will actually know what it means?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, too morbid about it all, but I think, you know, one of the things that struck me while I was working on this film was seeing, you know, how many of these spaces you would have people who are over 75 and who are under 35.
Yeah.
Sort of very, very few people in the middle. I that was most specific in Milwaukee. It was a sad scene. I ended up cutting where we filmed with a meeting of the current socialist party in Wisconsin, and it was like five or six people in their 80s who were sitting in a library, including Frank Zeidler's daughter, the last socialist mayor, and then, you know, hanging out with the DSA chapter, and it's all, you know, people in their 30s, right? And some young kids running around drinking beer in a park. That the disinformation for campaign that you speak of was really, really powerful. And we'll see. Right now, that you have, I think it's the majority under 35 say they prefer socialism to capitalism. I don't know how that will continue as people get older. But yeah, the generational it's super real. We saw that with the Bernie campaign as well. Yeah.
Right. And what's sad is the Democratic Party establishment keeps pushing the same nonsense. I mean, you have the Nancy Pelosi's and the Jim Clyburns and just furthering the misinformation, talking about socialism as if it's evil, which doesn't do anybody any good. When you spread lies and misinformation, it helps dumb down our society, and American society has been dumbed down more than enough over the last few decades.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see. You know, I don't want to say things have to get so much worse before there's, you know, pitchforks and fighting and stuff. Yeah, it frightens me. I mean, I have a little baby. I have a 1.5-year-old. So I do definitely, you know, think about these generational issues. What are her politics going to be that are she's going to be judging me for now? But I don't think, I think it's too, the younger generations are just too burdened. With student debt, there was just a graph that I saw was being posted around social media of generational wealth and where people had, I don't know if you saw that, like the wealth that different people have now. And just at this, I'm 35. So look, or I'm not 35, I'm 39, but looking at where the boomers who were at that age how much money they had versus now, it's no contest. And so you can keep saying, oh, socialism doesn't work, but it's very clear capitalism is not working for most people. And I think, you know, you can't argue with that. You can't keep telling people, no, it is. When you can't get health insurance and you have to have a job while you're also trying to like watch your child and there's no daycare. And, you know, those lies don't work for so long.
No, not at all. This is a great jumping off point. The film, The Big Scary S Word, opens Friday in theaters and on demand, so you don't have to leave your home. It is well worth the time, especially over Labor Day weekend, when we think about the plight of the worker in this country. Neither of the major parties in this country are looking out for the little working guy. We are all, I mean, everything favors the wealthy. And I think it's time for a change. And this is one way to open your eyes and maybe help educate friends and other people who may not understand what the word socialism means. Let's take this opportunity to educate them and tell them there's nothing scary about the word socialism. And maybe they'd do be very well served by learning a little more about it. Yael Bridge, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to meet you. And I really enjoyed the movie. Congratulations. Oh,
thank you so much. And you can find out where to watch it and how to rent it by going to socialismmovie.com.
Socialismmovie.com. Yeah. It's on the Chyron underneath you. I'll also post it on the blog, great. On the website where I post the interview. Socialismmovie.com. Yael, thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. There you go. It really was good. And I can't think of a better way to, it is for something to do on Labor Day weekend than, you know, learn, have a little party at your house and show your friends socialism is nothing to be scared of. You know, it would actually help you. All right. We're getting close to the end of the hour. I couldn't let the hour go by without mentioning what's happening in New Orleans. Hurricane Ida, just devastating. And as somebody who lives in South Florida, I was living in Los Angeles at the time of Hurricane Andrew, but I was here taking care of my father, who had just had a really bad accident when Hurricane Andrew hit. It's horrific. Andrew was really bad. Ida, I think we're going to find out, was every bit as bad. And the thing that's different between Andrew and 92, 93, and Hurricane Ida now in 2021 is climate change. Things are worse. That hurricane grew so big and so strong over the warm waters, the Gulf of Mexico, as it made its way towards the shore. And this time, unlike Katrina, this it was a direct hit on New Orleans. The entire city of New Orleans is without power. Chances are many of those people will be without power for weeks. And yes, as I mentioned earlier, apparently the former guy did a radio interview where he bitched that on the cable shows, they covered the hurricane all night instead of talking about what's going on in Afghanistan. Yeah, well, what's going on in Afghanistan is that the fucking war is finally over and you didn't end it, though you did surrender to the Taliban. All right, I'm in a good mood today. I'm not going to let this get to me. But I couldn't end without mentioning the people who are suffering under the storm. And the storm is still going on. It stayed as a Category 4 for hours after it made landfall, which is unheard of because usually when it hits land, it automatically drops to a tropical storm or tropical depression. This remained a Category 4. Then dropped to a Category 3. wreaking havoc, devastation all over Louisiana, now into Mississippi, and it's going to travel up. Probably it'll hit New York as well. If we were a little more socialist, we'd take care of those people, not like Donald Trump with throwing paper towels. And I got to say, Joe Biden has already activated a major emergency for Louisiana, but we can do more and we should. All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for bearing with me. Until tomorrow, I say be well, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks. Bye. All right. And now I shall leave you with what's news, because we can. All right. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We begin the week with an overload of bad news on three fronts: COVID, Afghanistan, and Ida. We'll begin in Louisiana, where Hurricane Ida made landfall as a powerful Category 4 storm, hitting with top sustained winds of 150 miles per hour. The storm has killed at least one person and knocked out power to a million customers, including the entire city of New Orleans, with reports of significant damage to buildings and residents trapped on rooftops. The storm was so strong it actually temporarily reversed the flow of the Mississippi River near New Orleans, something the U.S. Geological Survey says is extremely uncommon. Adding insult to injury, the hurricane hit on the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, from which the area still has not fully recovered. Ida has now weakened to a tropical storm, but it's still churning up deadly storm surge as it lingers inland. The National Weather Service in New Orleans says areas affected by surge could be uninhabitable for weeks or months. Tornadoes are also a threat right now. On to Afghanistan, where the U.S. military on Sunday said it killed suspected suicide bombers in a vehicle filled with explosives with a drone strike in Kabul. A U.S. official said the vehicle posed an imminent threat to the effort to evacuate U.S. citizens and Afghans who are desperate to escape the country following the Taliban's takeover. The Taliban said the airstrike killed multiple civilians, including some children, and said they'd investigate the strike. The U.S. military also said it was investigating. The U.S. embassy in Kabul had warned of a, quote, specific, credible threat to people around the airport, the scene of suicide bombings that killed up to 200 civilians and 13 U.S. service members last week. An Islamic State affiliate claimed responsibility for that attack. Well, as expected, the violence continued Monday morning when as many as five rockets were fired at the Kabul airport. The U.S. says the attack has not hampered ongoing evacuation efforts, but that more threats, potentially even to the U.S. homeland, may remain. And the deadline to get U.S. troops and Americans out of Afghanistan is now 24 hours away. The U.S. and about 100 other countries have pledged to hold the Taliban to their promises to let people leave the country after the August 31st deadline. The Biden administration has said that the deadline is, quote, not a cliff, and is committed to safe passage for all Americans and Afghan allies. President Biden on Sunday joined grieving families in Delaware to pay respects as military aircraft returned the bodies of the 13 U.S. service members killed in the suicide bombing attack at the Kabul airport last week. The president and first lady met privately with relatives of the troops whose remains were carried in flag-draped cases by honor guards in battle dress. And on to COVID. Dr. Anthony Fauci says another 100,000 people could die of COVID-19 in the U.S. by December if vaccination efforts and other safety measures aren't fulfilled. However, if some of the 80 million or so eligible unvaccinated Americans choose to get the shot, things could be less bad. The current daily average of 155,000 newly reported cases has left many hospitals over capacity. Available beds, ventilators, and staff have been hard to come by in some hospitals, and now we add oxygen supplies to that list. Fauci also said that he backs making COVID-19 vaccines mandatory for all school children. Fauci telling CNN State of the Union, quote,
I believe that mandating vaccines for children to appear in school is a good idea. And remember, Jake, this is not something new. We have mandates in many places and schools. We've done this for decades and decades, requiring polio, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis. So this would not be something new, requiring vaccinations for children to come to school.
The European Union is preparing to again recommend a halt to all non-essential travel from the U.S. European leaders reportedly have been considering the changes over the last month as the average U.S. infection rates surpassed that of the European Union. Some countries are expected to continue letting in American tourists who can prove they have been fully vaccinated. In other news, tensions building ahead of an election in California that could end not only with the ousting of Governor Gavin Newsom, paving the way for a political unknown, the leading contender being a right-wing hate talk radio host named Larry Elder. If a majority of voters vote yes on recalling Newsom, whichever challenger gets the most votes will become governor. There are something like 46 names on the ballot, so it's possible that somebody like Elder could become governor with a mere 10% of the vote. It's insane. Vote no on the recall. And finally, actor Ed Asner, best known for his role as Lou Grant in The Mary Tyler Moore Show, died Sunday morning. Asner, in addition to his many amazing roles, was a lifelong Democrat and activist. He served as president of the Screen Actors Guild from 1981 to 85, and as union leader, opposed U.S. policy in Central America. Ed Asner was 91. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.